Welcome back for another episode of Answer the Call. Today is another special interview. We're doing these pretty much throughout January and February because, as you'll see, I have been a little tardy on publishing a lot of client success stories as I was just doing a lot of behind the scenes work, apparently not on the podcast, but on other things last year. So anyway, I double checked with Jonathan and he's like, yeah, go ahead. Still publish it. So we recorded this last summer, June 2023, and Jonathan and I actually worked together throughout 2022. And he has such a cool story. Listen to this. So Jonathan Bryant was a lawyer, and then actually he didn't just pivot into maybe what job title you'll see in the title of this episode. We had a really interesting and special journey of working together in which, this is realistic, by the way, he followed a good idea, which was not the career he's currently in, for a variety of months. And then we ended up realizing that was a good option, but that wasn't even the absolute best option out there. We found an even better one. So he ended up going through the pursuit of pivoting from law to UX research. Then UX research ended up going through a very interesting time as a profession, i.e. tech layoffs, i.e. UX research jobs are pretty much hard or impossible to find these days. And so he actually has the coolest story of, instead of just backing down and saying like, oh man, what a loss, like that was so frustrating, it ended up being what led him to finally stop putting entrepreneurship on the back burner, because it wasn't something he was very motivated to consider in the past. This is, again, I cannot underscore enough how cool and just honest and human Jonathan's story is. And that's why I love getting to hear all of the lessons learned that he shares in this episode. And it's so special that he shared this story to now being a successful small business owner of a business that he now realizes is so perfect for him and the way God designed him. But he really liked the security of being employed by an organization. And it took that hardship to make him realize, okay, I actually really am receptive to this work that God is doing on my heart. And I realized that this closed door with UX research is actually such a kindness that God is giving me, to realize that it's time to start my own small business. So here's what that is. He is a freelance copy editor. So I actually want to stop for a second and explain. I have had quite a few clients who freaking love, they love cleaning things up, editing. They love words. They love perfecting things. Maybe not creating, but they love editing. And I have had several clients, not just Jonathan, look into careers that are proofreading in nature. And this is such a good one that he found that matches that. So he is a freelance copy editor and writer who uses his background as an attorney to help law firms, corporations, and small businesses enhance their written work product. He helps maximize the clarity. He's really good with words, so this is what he wrote. It's on his LinkedIn profile. It's so awesome. So he helps maximize the clarity and coherence of articles, blogs, memoranda, training materials, and more by employing principles of syntax, usage, and grammar. Oh, I love that God made him this way. He didn't make me this way, but he made Jonathan this way. And I just delight in how different God makes everybody for a purpose. So he is truly passionate about serving as a bridge between authors and audiences to help improve the communication and impact of an author's message. You could learn more about his services at mercuryeditorial.com. That's again at www.mercuryeditorial.com. I'll leave that also in the show notes as a link. So please join me in welcoming Jonathan Bryant. Jonathan, welcome to the podcast and your debut as a It Happened success story. So I can't wait to get into your story. And let's just start with, Can you say a little bit about your career background and what you do now?
Yeah, of course, of course. And thanks so much for having me on. I'm really excited to be here. So my background is as an attorney. So I practiced law for roughly 5 years, mostly doing corporate and securities work for a firm in Austin, Texas. And then now I've started my own company called Mercury Editorial Services.
I didn't know the name. That's so
That's the
legit.
name.
I
Yeah.
like it.
Good, thanks. That's step one, I guess. What I do there is I provide copy editing services to attorneys and businesses. Rather than editing like books or novels, I work with people on corporate communications and reports or contracts and articles or website content, things like that. So.
I could not be happier for you. And it is an interesting ride up until this point that you happen to be at. So I'd like to start at the beginning when we met and you were still in law. What inspired you to reach out or Google like Christian career coaching or whatever you put in?
I mean, really, I knew what I was doing wasn't working, and I had no idea what to do next. I really felt like practicing law was not what I needed to be doing anymore. And just wasn't sure what the next steps were. I really it sounds strange, but I really liked my law firm. I liked the people there, and I really felt like they were doing their best to take care of me and had some good relationships. And so I didn't want to just move firms. I really felt like that would be just kicking the can down the road and maybe making the situation worse, because I really felt good about my firm. So I was looking at, what else to do, and was just kind of hopelessly Googling, careers for former attorneys, or trying to find stuff based on my Myers-Briggs type or whatever. And that was just not cutting it, and was really I just felt like I didn't have a have any sense of a process for how you make a big career change, or how to find what you want to be changing to, right? Because those are two different things, is one finding something and then actually making the transition. And so I'd kind of been in that space where I felt like I needed to make a move, but just didn't know what to do for a long time. And just, in talking to my wife about it for the who knows how many time, she was, I think, the first one that said, you should probably like talk to somebody that knows something about this. And I just thought there was a lot of wisdom in that. And so that's when I started trying to find someone who knows what they're doing, and that's you.
I'm so flattered. Well, I want to hear a bit about like what were the indicators that though your setting, like the law firm you were at, made it clear that your setting wasn't the problem. It was a great company to be at. It was really the function itself that you realized you might invest your time better elsewhere. And I really want your perspective from this as like a high achieving person, especially since I get to talk with so many people who they're like, I can do a lot of things, and I did make it through law school or med school or whatever it is, but there's something that tells me this isn't it. What were those things that told you it wasn't it?
So a lot of it was just as I was practicing law, learning more about what the career entails outside of just the kind of I guess like day to day, or kind of the practical aspects about what it really means to be an attorney and what you're doing every day and the type of personality you have to be successful at that. And so some of that was learning that, and then some of it was learning more about myself and how those two things related. And so what I found was, and saying this now, it sounds really obvious, and like I should have figured this out a lot sooner.
That's how it is for all of us, though. Hindsight is 2020.
Practicing law is related around conflict and risk. And your job as an attorney is to find out all the possible worst case scenarios that could happen to your client and then manage those. And most of the way that you manage those is you try to push them off over to the other side, and they're trying to do the same thing back at you, right? Like, there's opposing counsel that you're always butting up against. And so just inherently, it's kind of a conflict-oriented practice. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, for some people, that's what they enjoy about it. They view it as kind of a you know, competitive, and they like the kind of, the back and forth and ending up in a place that works well for both parties. And that's just not my personality. That's not how I saw it. I just was completely worn down with what I felt like was conflict, that was, you know, the main part of my job that I was managing every day. And that's just kind of the way practicing law works. And that's the way my personality works. And so I decided, rather than keep, just beating my head against the wall, to find something that made more sense. And again, and part of that is too, is kind of the pervasiveness of those two traits, right? Like, of course, I mean, nobody likes conflict, I don't think. Like, that's not some
false. You know, God makes all sorts of people.
Sure. But it's not like, though I can just like run and hide from any conflict in my life. Like, there's always going to be conflict. There's always, you know, no matter what you're doing. But it was just kind of realizing, I'm not one of those people that enjoy conflict, or that's not something that comes natural to me. And that's difficult. That takes a lot of energy from me. And as far as careers go, being an attorney is pretty high up there on the conflict scale. So it makes sense that it's not like I'm still going to have to face at some point in my life and career and continue to grow and like become better at handling conflict and, you know, that sort of thing. But that doesn't mean that I need to be in the most conflict oriented career in the world. Right.
Thank you for stating it that way. This is so relatable to a lot of other stories I've gotten to witness, which is this key theme of realizing, I understand I could continue to try to adapt, but at some point that becomes ridiculous because these themes are going to not ever change in a deep and meaningful way, because the inherent design of this role and the inherent design of me is just going to constantly cause an energy deficit, which has impacts on your health and really isn't to be blamed on, oh, you just need to change your attitude. You need to be more grateful. Oh gosh. Like, especially I really ran up against that. And that's another mission I had behind starting this career coaching practice years ago, is because I thought, wait a second, I don't think that the like unspoken assumption that to be a good Christian, you need to hunker down and change your attitude is necessarily the definition of faithfulness. At some point that becomes stupid. And so, I just really appreciate stories like yours. I want to rattle off the list of career options that we considered. So after we did the initial portion of our work, you did like the prep work, the reflection, all of that. Here's the options that we put on our maybe
list. It's a long list.
I love it. You know, I've seen longer, I've seen shorter, but yours is fun. So we pinpointed staying or moving into that was my phone. Sorry, don't cancel. You know when your phone shakes and it's like undo typing, and it's like, no, please keep the questions I typed out for this podcast. So we pinpointed moving into doing in-house law, being a business law professor at a university, teaching high school UX research and supply chain management, and Can you share a bit about the process of what it was like whittling those options down and how you came to UX research as your selected option at the time?
Yes. And so important to note that you didn't just make a mistake right there. Yes, I did select UX research at the time, and I am now doing editing. And editing was not on that list that you mentioned.
We talk more about this.
And so we can drill down into how I ended up editing in a second, I'm sure. But as far as whittling down the list goes, it's entirely, not entirely, but such a major portion of that came down to informational interviews. Mm-hmm. And that was your process and tools and materials to help, teach how to do that and to provide steps to make that process happen were just invaluable. Because that was, that was something that was really nerve-wracking for me to just approach people cold out of the blue and say, hey, I need your help. I don't really have anything to offer you in return. I would just like kind of some of your time. That's not a great feeling. You made the process easy and kind of showed how to walk through it and gave some great examples of approaches to take. And of course, it turns out that everyone is almost to a person incredibly willing to help and they feel grateful, I think. And it just makes them feel good that you think that they have something that's valuable that you're seeking and help to offer. So again, kind of like how I was mentioning that it took me a while to figure out the personality traits and types of things that really went into practicing law. Similarly, to change to a new career, you can't just, read about it or rely on your own experiences. You really have to dig in with somebody that has done it and has had the time to figure those things out. To really get a picture of what it's like and the type of person that does the career well and is a good fit for the career. So those were the most important thing in whittling it down was just talking to people that do it. I think I ended up doing something like 16 interviews across the board. So just as much information as possible to help understand what a real picture of doing the career is like in order to whittle down and narrow down those options.
And you did multiple with each professional, just like I suggest, which is so helpful because you don't want to just take one person's word for it. And you also, by the time you have another conversation on the books, you're like, oh, I realized all these other things that I really want to make sure are accurate benefits of the position. Like, I really want to make sure that the positive assumptions I have about this position are correct. And I want to make sure that there's a way to avoid these concerns that I have. Mm-hmm. And if not, what's a better idea that I should be pursuing? Let's crowdsource this. And it's so cool. And I just think it's, to me, like biblical of getting a diversity of counsel and not from Google, like real people. I similarly was like, what do you, like ex-tech consultants go into, like what career options do I have? I was like, well, I don't want any of those. So I'm really grateful that that process was helpful to you. And I also just have to underscore what you mentioned about the understandable hesitations of, you want me to go ask people for their time and not have anything in return? Dumb. But actually you give something far more valuable, I would argue. And you witnessed it apparently of, you actually gave them probably the deepest feeling of reward and impact that they at least had on that one day, maybe that month, because people love helping others, especially when it's not like a ethereal impact that you're making. Mm-hmm. You literally get back to them and it's like, based on what you told me of XYZ about this profession, I decided this would be a great fit. Or based on our conversation, once you told me those things and you suggested this path instead, you totally changed my perspective. And people are like, oh, I changed somebody's life. And it's like, yeah, you did. It's so good. So
yeah, absolutely.
Let's start getting into the story of like you changed from UXR mm-hmm. to editorial services.
Yeah.
How? Why? How long was that journey?
Yeah. It was fairly substantial. So I decided on UXR. I left my law firm. I took a couple of informal certificate type classes in UXR. I did like a internship boot camp combo thing in UXR, all of which took several months. I finished the internship, started looking for full-time UXR positions. So like it was not a process of years, but I was entrenched. I was doing it. I was on the path.
And you were treating it like full-time work, like your preparations, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I was. The internship and boot camp program that I did was certainly substantial enough to merit full-time consideration. So I was doing it. And then over the course of those months, while I was still looking for a UXR job, sort of by accident, sort of on purpose, kind of a confluence of factors, started thinking about, part of it was it'd been so long that I'd been without a steady income that I needed to have some cash coming in the door. So I was looking for, kind of easy, quick ways to have a side hustle basically. And, came across some like freelance writing and editing jobs. And as I was thinking about that and looking at that, I realized, I had thought about writing in general as kind of one of my innate advantages. And that's something that I really liked about practicing law, was that aspect of written communication and really being exact and specific with language to help convey complicated concepts. But I had never pursued it seriously, or that didn't make my short list, because I just...
And why was that? Tell me why it didn't make your short list.
Well, because I didn't give it due consideration and just kind of thought, okay, what can I do with writing? Well, I don't want to like try to become the next, great American novelist. So, that's probably out. What I should have done probably is say, that's kind of a cool thing and something I enjoy doing. Let me see if I can talk to some people and explore the different types of career paths that are involved in writing, but I did not. So I kind of got a sense of a deeper level of possible career opportunities that are out there for that specific thing. And found some freelance editors and talked to them. And actually found someone who, when I told him about my background, just said, oh, I know tons of former attorneys that are now editors and kind of do this real specific thing working with businesses. And I was like, well, let me talk to them. And they just gave me like five or six names, and I talked to all of them. And so that started kind of just in the service of kind of getting cash in the door and trying to fill the gaps while I was looking for a full-time UXR role. But as I was digging into it, I started thinking about how, that was really, something that I enjoyed doing and fit my skill set. And I think, leveraged my experience and legal background in a stronger and more, obvious way than UX research did. Then it turned out I was able to kind of get a couple early jobs, and kind of get a little bit of traction, and that kind of got some momentum, faster than my UXR career search, was going. And so it was kind of a confluence of, one, just deciding to walk through the door that was open instead of the door that was closed. And two, kind of just having a new option that I hadn't considered before. And that upon, again, you know, hindsight is 2020, upon it being kind of shoved in my face because I didn't have the creativity to think of it myself, or the wisdom to ask other people about
it's
it.
It's okay. It's kind of on me too.
No, not at all.
My perspective on this is like, also when we caught up recently, it, and this goes into my next question about, you mentioned to me, you don't regret the months spent pursuing a full focus on getting a UXR position, but rather you see it as the thing and maybe the only thing that led you to the even better one. And so your perspective on, I don't regret it, is something that I think we need to camp out on. And additionally, I know that you mentioned if we had considered that before, you weren't open to self-employment at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what changed your mind?
Yeah. And that's, there's a lot there. First of all, I mean, yes, I don't regret that. I think it ended up being 8 or 9 months, something like that. My math may be wrong off the top of my head, that I was full time devoted to building up UXR skills and looking for a UXR job. I don't regret that at all, because one, I don't think that was like a wrong decision. I don't view that as like a mistake and then I'm like making up for it now. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think if I hadn't ended up here and I got a UXR job, I don't think like I would have hated it, right? Like, I think I would have been perfectly okay. I would have been happy, and could have had a very successful UXR career, and that would be great. So I don't think like I don't, there's kind of degrees and gradations of fit. And I think UXR still made a lot of sense and would have been totally fine. So I don't see it as just a, binary. I've now realized that was a terrible decision and I need to, flip my life. So that's one thing. Secondly, as you mentioned, I think even if I had a fuller understanding of some of the career options for writing and editing based careers at the time, I don't think I would have been willing to take the leap of starting my own business and being self-employed, just because as I mentioned briefly earlier when we were talking, I tend to be a fairly risk adverse person and really like security and certainty. And so, the inherent, lack of just being able to see down the road that comes with starting your own business was not something that I was particularly interested in. But that 8-9 month process of not having a traditional job, and, being in kind of school, kind of internship, kind of job searching, kind of threw me into that world, whether I wanted to be or not. Even though it was short term, it was for probably a longer time period than I was anticipating initially, where I didn't have the security of a, 9-to-5 and the, paycheck and 401k and benefits. Mm-hmm. And I realized that was okay. And,
lived.
I lived. The world did not start crumbling around my shoulders. And I saw a lot of the benefits and advantages of that sort of thing in a new light as well, with, flexibility and managing my own workload and feeling... There's just something very freeing about being the kind of sole decision maker of your goals and you know, what you're trying to accomplish. And so all of those things just made me see it in a different light than I would have previously. And another big thing too was just understanding that, yeah, I'm not a huge risk taker, and that's okay. Again, that's a personality thing. But also there are, I think this is important too, that I, again, sounds obvious, but I hadn't really considered, is that there are levels of risk in starting a business. I just always assume starting a business is risky, therefore it's off the table. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as far as what I'm doing, like I'm providing services mostly online, like I'm it's not like I had to go out and take a second mortgage to like open up a factory or anything. Yeah,
exactly.
You know, like there are ways that you can manage and set up self-employment where you can kind of tailor it to some degree, at least, to your acceptable levels of risk. So learning all those things throughout those 8 or 9 months, I think put me in a position to make that decision that I wouldn't have made at the start. So I'm grateful for that learning opportunity that was kind of forced upon me to present me with this path that I think is a really good fit.
That is so good. I'm just stunned by the graciousness of God that I firmly believe this, especially after the last year or so of witnessing your story and also coming alongside Kyle as another podcast guest that I'll be sharing about soon. He was a client, and also Savannah. These are three stories within the last year where we really did thoroughly in our discernment process find a good path that genuinely it was the most faithful decision that we could make at the time, not knowing, having a crystal ball into the future. And so what happened in UXR is we didn't really realize that the market downturn was going to end up affecting UXR particularly hard, as it ended up being seen as a luxury tech position to have on your payroll rather than more of a necessity. And so then all of a sudden there's all these layoffs of UXR professionals that are with experience on the market trying to compete for these jobs. And so for newcomers, it became even more hard, not impossible, but through that unexpected delay of, yeah, we would think, oh yeah, this is going to work out like 3 or 4 months, job hunt, sure. Through that unexpected delay and just like the hand of God, it ended up that He worked it all out for your good no matter what. Mm-hmm. And just like you said, UXR would have been great. And this is also great. And it was God showing you through experience, like, yeah, hey, look, you can actually do this. Look, this is available to you. Yeah. Actually, business ownership maybe isn't all the bad that you thought it might come with. And it actually has all this good. And mm-hmm. then witnessing I'll just compare it to my entrepreneurial journey, the influx of initial clients, just as encouragement and almost validation from God of like, oh yeah, you could get this.
Yeah.
Look at this. I'm blessing this business, was so encouraging. And so along with Kyle's story and Savannah's story, I've just seen that any forward movement where you are trying your best and genuinely knowing that you are doing everything you can to seek, ask, knock while praying, while surrendering, but moving while surrendering rather than just sitting in your bedroom at night and being like, God, bring me a job. I hate this one. Your will, not mine, though. It's like it doesn't really work as well, because God actually wants you to become the kind of person that, just like in Genesis chapter 12, when he's calling Abraham, he doesn't say, go to Canaan. He says, go to the land that I will show you on the way. And so you don't have to be afraid of making, I don't know, I'm sure that you would state all the caveats to this statement so beautifully, but you don't necessarily have to be afraid of making the wrong decision or considering an incorrect path, because God works all things out to your for your good. And it might just be the very thing that leads you to the positive step that you were praying for. You just didn't know it would look like that or be called that. Anything you want to add there?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. It's just the phenomenon that I think we are a lot more comfortable with in other areas of our lives, that just there aren't really perfect decisions. You make the best decision you can based on the information that you have at the time. And it's okay to make more decisions after you make that one. It's, you know, it's nothing is permanent. So yeah, I think that's kind of, I think I certainly had the idea that my career was something that like I owned and could just like wrestle to the ground as far as like my path and stuff. But again, like it's just like everything else in life, like things happen that we can't control. We don't have all the information. There's no requirement that you have to stay on one path once you're there. So yeah, the mix of all those things, I think, yeah, really putting that in the context of, you know, other decisions that we make every day with the best information we have available, really helps to fix that perspective. And yeah, absolutely. It's certainly, again, one of the, just another in many examples in my life and throughout others and scripture all over the place of God having his own timeline and it always being different and better than we could expect or imagine.
Amen. So well said, just like I thought. Now that you're on the other side of this career transition, excitedly, yay, celebratory pinata bursting, I would really like to hear your perspective for others who are in a similar situation to what you were in, where you're in a very traditionally successful career and, you know, think the lawyers, doctors, whatever's of the world, that are realizing it's not for them, but they're like, I invested a ton of time and money into this. There was a high barrier to entry and I made it. Who am I to go and waste that? What's your perspective now?
Yeah. So first of all, I mean, I think the most important thing to say is that's like real. Like that's not, that is something that was very difficult for me. That was a real struggle and is still like, it's not like there's a light switch and I'm good with that now, right? Like that's still something that I have to, you know, continuously remind myself of the decisions that I made and why I made those decisions and what I believe. So it's not, you know, that's not just a, no part of this is just a, well, just get over yourself, you'll be fine. It's a challenge. It's a hard thing to do. There's so much that goes into that, but what it comes back to for me is, just you are not what you do. There's a balance. And I think the fears that are related to what you described about, you know, kind of the sunk cost fallacy in traditionally successful careers, for me, at least, a lot of that came from finding my identity and being an attorney, perceiving my value there, perceiving my value in, you know, the monetary benefits that came with that and how much security is present in that career path. And it's just, that's not, that's not what God promises to us or says about who we are, right?
Praise God. How awful thankfully to have our identity tied up in something that's like, you gotta show up for that every day and it could fall. Like,
scary. There's just some sort of realization at some point along the way for me was important, and just that, that it's not promised. It's not, there's no guarantee that I will maintain the capacity to be an attorney for, you know, the rest of my working years. I mean, there's any number of things that could happen, you know, to me or in the market or whatever else that I can't control. And if that's the case, you know, then where am I? And so if that's something, you know, if this isn't permanent, then why would I try to make it that way? Because I feel like I should. So that's certainly one thing. And then I think another thing too is changing doesn't mean that you couldn't hack it or that you failed. That was definitely something that I struggled with too. I didn't want to be a failed attorney, right? But I think that's certainly not the case. I think that's definitely internally driven. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. If I am, who cares? But I don't think there's anybody else out there that's thinking about me just going, man, Jonathan must have been a terrible attorney, probably because they're not thinking about me at all. One.
And because that's just not true. You're good at, you know, I saw your GPA. You're good at the law. He loves the law.
not that that's necessarily a one-to-one correlation. But yeah, but it doesn't mean, like, I mean, it's not, failure isn't the only reason to move on from things. A lot of times in people's lives, not that this is what happened to me necessarily, but a lot of times you move on to something because you've conquered it or like you've reached the pinnacle, right? So why would you stay there? So you can't just assume that because you changed, it's a failure, or people think like you had to change because they were going to run you out of the lawyer building, you know, with pitchforks. And so that was big for me too, realizing that and looking at myself internally and at my motivations and making sure that I wasn't doing it because I felt like I'd failed or because I was acting out of fear. I think that's important too. Because if that's your reasoning, I mean, you're going to fail at everything at some point, and you can just kind of end up to keep running just to avoid that. And that's not the way you want to do it either. So those are the two big things for me, just realizing that my identity can't be wrapped up in being an attorney. It has to be that, you know, I'm a child of God, and the things that he says are true about me, and that doing something different doesn't mean that I had been doing something wrong.
Amen. I also just think that one thought that comforted me is when I was making my big change was maybe the most secure place to be is within the will of God. Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because it could just all go away tomorrow.
Yeah.
But if you know, because of like the closeness between you and your Father in heaven, that I am following you. And of course, we're not perfect at that. Mm-hmm. But when you get close to him, you get to know his character, and you could see, as long as I'm saying, God, help me, here's what I'm feeling right now, show me whatever I need to repent of, and then walk in that way. I was like, hey, don't worry. Well, no matter what, don't worry. Because that's one of the biggest commandments in the Bible. I'm just babbling now, but go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, I think another important thing too is that's still true of me, like right now, right? Like my identity and all that other thing is not now that I'm an editor, right? Like it's not like the shift to being an editor is what made me okay. It's that I realized my identity can't be tied up in my job, and that allowed me freedom to do something else, right? I think that's a really important thing too. I think it's you can't just go searching for your identity across careers. I think you have to use your identity to allow you the freedom to find a career that fits for you. And that's a really fine distinction, but I think that's really important as well.
I'm so glad you're my conversation partner on this topic, because you just rounded that out so well. And so two more questions I want to ask you.
Yeah.
One is kind of along this theme.
Yeah.
You mentioned to me that the theology of work portion that we went through was really significant to shaping your view of work and giving you freedom to go towards something else.
Yeah.
What were some of those lessons that made a difference for you, and why? Like, why does understanding a proper theology of work and what God cares about and what he doesn't care about matter?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. That was huge. And yeah, a lot of that was what we were just talking about. That certainly is involved in it. But I think that's balanced on the other side too, with one of the things that you point out, and I think some other people have pointed out as well, that work was not a curse that happened after the fall. Work was affected by the fall, like everything else, but Adam and Eve worked in the garden before the fall. And that is really a paradigm shift from how I viewed it. So it's the human mind is an incredible thing, where simultaneously, I think I was holding on to that idea of like putting too much importance on work and success in my identity, and like putting too much weight on it. And simultaneously, I wasn't putting enough weight on it. I simultaneously had at times or parts of my brain or attitude or whatever the right way to put that is, where I just was like the ultimate TGIF attitude, where I felt like I'd wake up Monday morning and was like, well, this is something that society expects me to do, and I have to do it to like pull my weight, and I want to be responsible. So I guess I better, you know, go get to the office today, and just a miserable the whole time I'm there, and just, you know, can't wait until Friday afternoon, and then just start the whole process over again. And just feel like it's something that I have to do in order to survive, which is also a terrible way to be living your life.
Like accepting it as a curse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like this is what it is.
Yeah.
What else?
That's exactly right. But I think, and I kind of, you know, just kind of feel those things simultaneously or ping pong between the two, right? Where I'd just be like, well, this is all there is. And then, you know, a little while later, I was like, I have to be, you know, the most successful and, you know, highest achieving whatever in order to be acceptable. But neither of those are true, I think. I think God, you know, created the world and put us in it and said that it was good, and wants us as humans to take a part in making the world good and keeping it good. And, you know, being good stewards of his creation. And one of the ways that plays out is using your skill set to be productive and help others and to shape God's creation in some, you know, like incredibly tiny and small way, but to use those things positively still.
Yeah.
And so I think looking at it from the right perspective, which again is certainly still not something I do on a continuous basis. You know, I'm still kind of trying to balance the seesaw. But I think when you kind of hit the balance right and see that work is a blessing from God that, you know, allows you to contribute and feel productive and help others, but is also, like all other blessings, in constant danger of flipping from blessing to idol, but keeping it in the right spot, the kind of almost involuntary reflex is that made me feel so much more excitement and purpose and willingness to work and find something where I felt like I was contributing in the best and maximum extent possible, and to really enjoy, you know, finding that thing and then pursuing it and getting better at it and trying to, you know, figure out the exact best way to use that to help people and have a positive contribution. So that's just a completely different attitude than either of the other two extremes.
That is so good. I'm thinking of how you laid that out. It, to me, I visualized it as like these tiers. You cannot, don't camp out on work as a curse.
Yeah.
Neither go so far to think of it as an idol, where when this thing feels like a dream to me and it's all going well, that will essentially be my salvation and the key marker of my life as it's going well, I'm going well. Like, woo, this is a great expression of who I am. It's mm-hmm. for you, by you. No, let's go like you're yeah. closer, but not yet. The highest tier is realizing that it's a gift from God and also for God. And you're doing it like a calling is from God. It's for him and it's through his strength. And so not even you belong to yourself. We're all rented. Yeah. And like, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but it's like everything belongs to him. But then he's the one, like in the parable of the talents, that says, now come and share in your master's happiness. Yeah. So he'll even lend you happiness. Mm-hmm. And but it could go away because the source remains constant. And so it doesn't have to be your salvation. And we'll probably dip back into idolization or when you're feeling hopelessness, experiencing it as a curse. But I'm grateful for community and just conversations that we get to like literally record and remember like this, where we're like, okay, fam, let's remember what we're shooting for, that it's a good and gracious gift from our Father.
Absolutely.
Last quick question. This is an easy one. How can people find you if they would like to hire you for editorial services?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me at mercuryeditorial.com. And look around there a little bit at some of the things I do specifically and some of the similar projects I've done. And there's a contact form there you can fill out and we can talk. I would love to do so. Yeah. Please reach out if you have something.
What are the kind of people that should be reaching out, like companies or contacts that you serve?
Yeah. Anybody that has a business that produces written content. So
me?
Lots of people. Yeah, sure. That wasn't what I was implying, but I'm glad that's where your conscience was. My main goal is to help people communicate better through writing. So if you're a business that has online content, then I can help you make sure that what the words that you're using are, you know, drawing people into your business. If you are, you know, producing an ad, I can help you make sure that, you know, the words in the ad are correct and concise and are communicating the message you want, or more full things like newsletters, reports, anything like that. Just any written document where you're trying to communicate something to your customers or clients, making sure that the message they're hearing is the message you intend.
Such a good service to put out there in the world. And I am really grateful that you get to use your gifts in this way. And I just pray God's continual blessing on your business. And thank you so much for coming on to share about your story. It's such an important one and a good testimony that God will bring you there. Just you wait. Don't you worry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. To get an even more meaningful head start into your calling, head to thecalledcareer.com, where my fellow career coach Audrey and I have created a whole suite of free resources and tools to help you get clear and get a job today. For those who are definitely ready to land a job or start a business in the next 6 to 12 months, we're here to help you biblically and practically discern your calling through coaching, reflection, and deep market research, identify the job that's aligned with it, even if you currently have no idea what you want, rebrand your resume and LinkedIn to translate your background to appeal to your future boss. P.S. We take this off your plate and do this for you. Also, we'll teach you how to land referrals and get attention from leadership through networking. Again, if that makes you nervous, we have these emails and LinkedIn messages literally written for you so you don't have to sweat. We're also here to give you unlimited interview practice so you're prepared to address every elephant in the room and knock selling yourself out of the park. Then we'll round out with helping you negotiate your salary so you land thousands more. Just so you know, recent clients have gotten $8,000 to $50,000 salary increases, even though they were totally non-traditional candidates. That's because we specialize in helping non-traditional career pivoters land jobs they're ecstatic to serve in. It takes work, but we're here to see you through until the end, when we're celebrating that day that you send me an email in all caps and you say, "Kelsey, I got the job." Then you could be on the podcast. But I'll be here until then, keeping you accountable and encouraged by meeting with you literally until you land the job you want, even if that's up to 6 months from now within our program. Apply to join at thecalledcareer.com, and I'll see you next week here at Answer the Call. Bye for now.